We're speaking with Jeremy Grimm, and he's the newly elected, the mayor-elect for Sandpoint. Jeremy, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with talking about the campaign, which was just as we speak, the election was only 6 days ago. We are recording this in advance of the airing on Wednesday. But from appearances, you approached the campaign with great vigor. So fill us in. What was your strategy? How did the campaign unfold, and what was the secret for success there?
Oh, well, secret for success, I'd have to reflect in that a little longer. But vigor, I was very motivated. A lot of your listeners will know that I work in land use and development. I'm a former planning director at the city. And I've just been probably more aware than most of what's happening at City Hall and how we're progressing. And, you know, it just became apparent to me that I have some unique skills that I think will help the city during this period of growth, this transition. And in terms of how the campaign worked, I didn't have a team. It was me, myself, and I, along with a bunch of great supporters. I was hand stuffing envelopes and, you know, sending out mailers and standing in the rain, waving signs. A big shout out to the Selkirk Firefighter Union, local union. They were a huge support for me, and as well as a number of friends. It was just a all hands effort. So it was exciting. I didn't really want to believe that it was going to happen until it happened, and here we go. So I'm excited for the next 4 years and ready to start in January.
Did you do a lot of door to door campaigning? I've always thought that is kind of a one key to getting elected in the city elections in Sandpoint.
Yeah, you know, I did. I probably knocked on maybe 50 doors myself personally, but representatives representing me knocked on almost every door in town. So
a volunteer crew.
Volunteer mm-hmm. crew. They went door to door, handed out flyers. You know, one of the things that's interesting, I don't know if it's a data point, but, you know, yard signs certainly seem to suggest, you know, levels of support. So I had a lot of individuals, a lot of friends who have yards and let me put their signs up. So that seemed to be the big one is, you know, where and how many signs do you get up out there? I'm sorry for all the yard pollution. We got them all picked up, so we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, some issues came up in the course of the campaign that I guess probably won you votes simply because some people have been feeling unhappy with the city. And I'm curious how big of an impact you thought some of these issues had, and maybe I'll rattle off a couple that you are few that you can answer that question about. And the additional part of that question would be, so what actions do you foresee pursuing on these issues going forward? It seems the city administrator position has been unpopular with many.
Yeah.
How do you think that played into the campaign?
I think that was a huge part of the campaign. Either intentionally or by default, the current mayor and recent mayor has been relatively absent. So we have a unelected person really driving city policy. I don't take anything away from the city administrator. She's been very effective. I just think she doesn't have her ear to the ground in the sense that she's not hearing what the community wants. So reevaluating that position. I don't think the current structure, operational procedure at City Hall are very sustainable. We've got a lot of mid-level employees. We've done away with what used to be department heads, the 7 or 8 department heads, and we put all that responsibility and decision making in one person's hands, and that's the city administrator. So that's priority number one, is to address how the city runs operationally and try to rebuild a structure that seemed to work for decades for the city.
Mm-hmm. So if we were to go to a scheme where the city is run more by department heads than a single city administrator, it seems like there's been a lot of turnover in those departments. Like the department heads that we had back when you were employed by the city aren't even there anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And it's going to take a few months to rebuild. Currently, it's my understanding there's about 15 to 16 direct reports to the city administrator. And that's because those people don't have a department head to report to. You know, ideally we'll get it down to about 7, maybe 8 direct reports, and those would be the division or department heads. But there is a gap right now. We're missing a utilities director, a public works director. We don't have a planning director. We don't have a parks director.
Yeah, recreation parks, yeah.
So unfortunately, the structure has put us into a situation where there's one person who's effectively running the whole city. And if that person is removed or departs, then we're going to have to fall back on someone. So I fully expect to be working 40 or more hours per week for the first couple months until we can get a operational structure in place that is more stable and can carry us forward.
So how is the city council involved in deciding what that structure is for the city?
So there's currently a general operational procedure and by division and employee and role layout for the city. That's going to need some tweaking. It'll require some council support if we're going to create new positions. The mayor does have some latitude to work within the guardrails of the current operational procedures and structure. So I'll be working with the council to, if it's appointed positions, we'll be appointing people, making recommendations and appointments for those department head positions. If it's within the latitude of the mayor's office, I'll certainly be filling those positions.
So just to clarify, would the city administrator position be eliminated?
Well, I think time will tell. Currently, I am not in favor of all-powerful sort of position that sits above the department heads. There's clearly some benefit to having a coordinator, so to speak, between the department heads. Now, historically, that was the mayor that was doing that work. The downfall to that is between administrations, you get a sort of a lame duck period, and sometimes projects, go into hibernation until the next mayor or administration comes online. So in some regards, it's helpful to have a coordinator between all those departments. But what I see moving forward is the mayor holding that role with a mayor having a full-time executive assistant to help facilitate that management.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, moving on to another issue that popped up during the course of the campaign, and you already kind of touched on it, but the firemen with the Selkirk Fire Rescue and EMS, which is the city fire department, combined with a couple outlying fire departments, they were very vocal on seeking changes in leadership, as reported in the Sandpoint Reader a few weeks ago. What role do you think that played in the election? And also, you kind of already commented on that, I know, but also, what do you see any action that you might be taking as mayor?
Yeah, so played a huge role. The union was out supporting me, pounding on doors, waving signs. I don't think I could have done it without them. But moving forward, about 8 years ago, we changed how the fire services supplied to the city. We entered into a joint powers agreement. We're now in bed, so to speak, with Sagal and Westside. So we have three districts or departments that are working to service the region. And this spring, we'll be renewing the contract with the union and negotiations for that joint powers board. Right now, the city of Sandpoint sits as the chairperson of that board with a voting member, and then Sagal and Westside have voting members. And the real question is, what's best for the region and the city in terms of service for the fire service? And I'm not sure at this point. I have some more research to do. I would like to ask them to do some research. One option could be to continue on as we've been doing right now. There's some bureaucratic challenges to that. It requires a lot of redundant, record keeping when one fire district is servicing another area and employees are moving back and forth. Another option may be to go back to the original structure where Sandpoint was alone, and our residents and businesses pay for fire service, and the Sandpoint Fire Department serves Sandpoint with some mutual aid. And then finally, another option might be to go with a single district, have them effectively merge and become a fire district as a standalone entity, and basically remove the city of Sandpoint from that service.
But it'd be a separate taxing district in that respect, yeah.
Right, but these are big questions. My concern about that last one is I wouldn't want to do anything that would impact the level of service that Sandpoint residents are receiving right now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a good discussion, and I'm sure we'll find a good solution to the friction and the challenges they're facing, because they are facing challenges. This growth, you know, there's more people on the roads, there's more traffic, there's more accidents. They're facing growth just like everyone else is. So we need to come up with a solution that works well for everyone.
Okay. Well, here's another issue that came up during the campaign, actually prior to the campaign. But the city engaged in a downtown waterfront design competition, which yielded a plan from a professional consultant. And at the same time, we also have the comprehensive plan update that's underway right now. Now, a lot of folks had a negative reaction to the downtown waterfront plan. So again, what do you think the impact was on the election from that particular issue, and what do you see going forward there?
Yeah. So I think it's, first I'll say it's great to have aspirations and to have a long-term vision. I think, you know, that talented team that put together that, you know, design competition.
The blue necklace, as they call the plan.
The blue necklace. I mean, it's you know, impressive, but the practicality of building that, putting it in a priority of what's the priority for the city right now, I think a lot of people saw that as a non-priority. And, you know, it's pretty ambitious to look at it. I think most people I spoke with are more concerned about the here and now. You know, how are the roads functioning? How are, you know, the sidewalks and the sewer and the water and the police and the fire? So I think the plan probably was mistimed. I mean, it does give us a dart on the wall or a vision for what Sandpoint could become. But I think most people are pretty concerned about what Sandpoint is today and how it's going to function in the next year or two, rather than a, you know, a 10, 20 or 30 year plan for the waterfront, which frankly, most people I spoke to said the city beach works pretty well. They've enjoyed it. And I think it brings into this larger conversation of what is the downtown? Who's it for? Who's City Beach for? Is it for our residents, or is this going to be a sort of an attraction that we leverage to try to draw more tourism and travel to the area? And what I heard a lot of folks say, and I agree, is, you know, tourism plays a role, but it shouldn't be our priority here. We need to focus on real jobs, year-round jobs, good-paying jobs, and of course the housing, the affordable housing challenge, which is also, you know, impacted by tourism, more second homeowners, vacation rentals. All these things put stress on our housing system, and we really need to focus on the businesses that are here today, great businesses that have year-round jobs, and how can we have just enough housing to make sure that our government and businesses can grow sustainably, and really not focus on this boom-bust tourism sector. That's not what I want for my kids, you know, and most of my friends who work 2 and 3 jobs wish they had one good year-round job that could support them here.
Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of businesses that do depend on tourism and the tourism dollars. Specifically, I think you could say the downtown retail core and the hospitality industry, obviously, the restaurants. So for those folks, it seems like, you know, they have concerns that they don't necessarily want to flood the town. There's such a thing as over-tourism now, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, we're seeing that in many places. I don't know if we reached a point where we would say we're, you know, we're in an over-tourism scenario here, but I assume it's a balance.
Yeah, it's a balance, and some of these things need to be addressed at the state level. As an example, the Chamber of Commerce receives sometimes $250,000 a year from the reversion of the bed tax in the state and the lodging tax. And right now, those dollars are restricted. They have to use those dollars for advertising for tourism outside of this market. So one question and one thought I brought forward at the state level on the Economic Advisory Council is, can we repurpose those dollars or open them up to pay for things like seasonal housing? It would seem to me that most people know where Sandpoint is at this point. To keep spending $200,000, $300,000, or $400,000 a year attracting people here, especially when Alterra just bought Schweitzer, I'm sure they're going to be doing a heck of a lot of promotion themselves. So I guess the question is, how much do we need to focus on tourism? I think it's a natural aspect of this community. We're going to continue to get tourists. And yes, it plays an important role. It provides a lot of amenities for year-round residents here. Many of our restaurants wouldn't survive if there weren't a tourism season. But my point is, it feels like residents at this point are second place, and we're focusing too much on tourism and attracting them and the amenities for tourists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's such a thing as resort city syndrome.
Yes.
Where people can't afford to live in the nice resort city where they need to work. Yeah. And that, of course, is related to housing. We'll talk about that a little bit in just a minute. One more on this line of inquiry here, but where we're talking about issues that were big during the campaign. One of them is the siting of the James Russell Sports Center at Traverse Park, and the fact that a number of trees had to be removed. Some of the trees were memorial trees that were planted in memory of some families. How big of an issue do you think that was for voters, and do you see any change of course there?
I don't see a change of course as far as I know, and I'm not privy to all the contracts and the penalties and the commitments, and I won't get that information until I'm mayor. But that was huge. And I think it's probably less about the trees are important, and the respect given to those memorials are important. But I think it's more about the process. The gift from the Russells was incredibly generous. But I think the community felt like the tail's wagging the dog here. And, what we really have to focus on is, how do we engage residents in a meaningful way so they can understand the projects, the pace, the elements of projects, and the impacts of projects? And that's a huge challenge. People are busy. I've got two kids and my wife works full time. It's hard to engage, in government. So, look at the voter turnout. I mean, what was it, 30-something?
34.7% of the registered voters in the city voted last Tuesday.
So, I mean, that's somewhat shocking, but we need to figure out a way to meet people where they are. And whether that's, of course, it's reinvigorating our citizen committees, but also doing something different to make sure that our residents have understanding and feedback on these projects. And most importantly, that we only proceed very, very cautiously once we're sure that we have the green light from the residents. So that's the lesson learned there. And hopefully we've learned that lesson.
You know, these results of the voting and the turnout, the voter turnout in an election, kind of points to how steep that hill is to climb. Because how do you activate people with all these other big issues that raised a big fuss, I think, with the Sports Center at Traverse Park and the city administrator position and the downtown waterfront design, which received immense amount of discussion, but a lot of that discussion must have been by people who are outside of city limits and couldn't vote.
Yeah.
So your issue is going to be, how do you activate the people inside the city limits on these things so that they'll get involved in the decision making?
Yeah, and it's, I heard some good ideas, better public notice, big bulletin boards maybe where people are downtown instead of just at City Hall. But it's going to, at the end of the day, it's going to be a combination of bringing people up to speed, making sure the city's website and interface is very clear about projects that are coming. Maybe even I'm thinking a stoplight type analogy where you have, you know, red, green, yellow. Red is a project is getting going. Yellow, it's starting to formulate, and green, this project's moving forward. So something to give people a better understanding of the pace. One of the best things I heard, Chris, was somebody said, "Let's make Sandpoint boring again." And I kind of like that because, if we're just focusing on what are the roads, you know, the utilities, sort of the public spaces that make this a great community, maybe that will tone down the pace of things and we can just kind of, you know, go about our way just doing regular projects and keeping the town mostly what it is, which is what people seem to like.
Let's pause for a little station ID here. If you just tuned in, this is 88.5 KROFY, the morning show. And I'm today's host, Chris Bessler, and I'm talking with Jeremy Grimm. He's the newly elected, at this point, the mayor-elect for Sandpoint. So, Jeremy, okay. On your website and at the forums, you spelled out a lot of priorities. What's your highest and what's top of your list in the first 100 days? I don't know why we came up with 100 days as the measure here, but that seems to be when new executive officers take the office.
Yeah, the honeymoon period.
Yeah, the 100 days to get stuff started. What are your top priorities?
I've got a couple. The first and foremost is looking at the organizational structure of City Hall. I made it quite clear I am not a fan of the current setup with a city administrator driving 99% of the decisions that go to council. So that's the first thing is evaluate what options there are to restructure City Hall, going back to a department head, a strong department head type of structure. Moving on from there, I'd like to look at obviously the Impact Fee Advisory Committee. We need to get that reestablished and have them start meeting right away. That's a critical element. The citizens committees want to get those repopulated with volunteers who can start engaging. And then probably the most important thing in my mind is the comprehensive plan. If you're not aware, we're in the final innings of that. But I would say it doesn't have to be the final innings. There's no need to rush through this. We can pause, have a number of workshops. I think it's critical that the public understands the importance of that document and what it says and how it guides us moving forward. Because the comprehensive plan is the structure and the vision that impacts everything. Zoning, projects, utilities, transportation, parks. So we need to make sure that comprehensive plan is vetted, that it's very accessible for the public to give us comments on it, and then eventually get that adopted. Mm-hmm.
So that actually came up for approval a couple city council meetings ago. They did put it off. Mm-hmm. Are you asking the current mayor and council to hang on there while you have a chance to come into office?
Yeah, I think that would be important. If you were here in 2009, that was the first big project I worked on from 2007 to 2009. And I've stated publicly that at that time we had 22 special council meetings once the comp plan got to the council. And to their credit, that city council went through every chapter, every paragraph, and really ensured that language was right. So I think we need to have a similar process. Now, I'm not saying the public needs to come to 22 different, workshops, but we definitely need a handful of workshops so the public can really understand what's in this plan. So, I think that should be, worked on and eventually hopefully adopted this spring.
Okay. One of your stated priorities, and that maybe it's more on your 100-day list, but focus on spending for critical infrastructure. So I guess my question here would be as a follow-up, what do you see coming down the pike for critical infrastructure, which I presume means roads and sewer probably. Yep. And then kind of a corollary to that is what role do you see the city playing with housing? Because we have a big squeeze on for affordable housing for workforce.
Yeah, great question. So critical infrastructure, absolutely. The first goal is to look at what capital improvement projects are budgeted for the next year. And I will do everything I can to refocus those dollars on streets. We all know that our streets are in really bad shape. Some of them, I'm worried, are going to literally fall into the clay this spring during spring breakup. So we need to focus on putting those back together and directing as much revenue as we can to those streets. The wastewater treatment plant, it's ancient. It's barely hanging on. So the voters are going to have a big number coming at them when we go to upgrade and rebuild that. I mean, it's going to be tens and tens of millions of dollars. So we're going to have to bring that to a bond at an election to the voters. And then water has some big problems, some gaps, some challenges. But once we can reprioritize the budget to critical elements, critical infrastructure, then, you know, we can look at some other things. And you bring up housing. So, you know, I think a lot of people aren't fully aware that the affordable housing issue, as far as I'm concerned, has pretty much been addressed. We've got somewhere between 400 and 500 units that are being actively constructed right now. I expect by next spring, there will be probably 400 new housing units available in town. So when you look at that, and if you understand supply and demand, I think we're going to have a housing price war here. I think the cost for rentals is going to go way down. I think people are going to be fighting and scrambling to get people in these units. And, you know, when you look at the jobs available, according to Idaho Labor, there's about 240 jobs in and around Sandpoint available right now. So, you know, some might say we need 240 housing units and then some more. I don't know what number that is, you know, to supply for businesses like yours and mine. But, you know, the free market has responded. I mean, there are more housing units under construction today in Sandpoint and Ponderay than we've ever had at one time. So I think renters and employers are going to be, you know, thrilled to see, you know, the inventory that's coming online.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
You know, the free market is a hard one to predict sometimes.
It is. It is.
So, okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to mention as priorities for you that you want to jump on soon as you come into office?
You know, more or less that covers everything. I do want to talk about urban renewal. You know, there's some discussion about transferring the city parking lot to urban renewal. I'm generally, you know, interested in something happening at the city parking lot. It's tired. It's old. It's a great piece of real estate. But at this point, I feel like there's just not the clarity from the comp plan. So I would hope that the council and urban renewal takes a pause on that and no one, you know, jumps forward in a big rush to transfer that to from the city to urban renewal. Right now, there's an agreement out there that would allow that transfer to happen. And I'm watching carefully and I hope that takes a back seat and can be put on hold for a while.
Mm-hmm. And that's specifically the city parking lot.
Correct.
Where for many, many years it's been discussed that there should be a parking structure there.
Yeah, parking structure, ground floor, maybe some upper floors. That I think we just need to wait right now and finish the comp plan and let the new administration come in so we can start coordinating a vision for what that's going to be.
How close is that agreement with urban renewal?
It expires at the end of November, as far as I understand it. Hmm. So that would allow the city to transfer that to urban renewal. Then urban renewal could sell it or transfer it to a developer. And I just have a lot of questions about that process, mm-hmm. especially in light of some of our new developers in the area.
Mm-hmm. Right there. An issue you may want to bring before the people.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, a few more questions before we wrap up here. And some things that came up, actually a logistical question, really. So the mayor's position is currently seen as being a part-time position. It only pays $25,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And you already addressed this a little bit. How many hours do you anticipate you'll put in, and you know, how will you balance the mayoral work with your day job?
Yep.
You run Whiskey Rock Consulting, yep. And I assume you need that income.
Yes.
No, nobody gets along on $25,000 a year anymore. So first part of the question, you know, how do you see balancing that? And then second, do you think the mayor's position should be a full-time position?
Yeah, the first part is I'll be working probably more than 40 hours a week at City Hall until I can put back a structure where we have 6 or 7 department heads that run their departments independently. Going back to 2014, 15, the mayor would have department or staff meetings once a week. Those 7 people would then run forward and take the initiative and take the action items forward. So the city ran pretty well like that for a long time. So once we can get that reestablished, I think I'd probably be back to 25 to 30 hours a week. I think that's reasonable. Yes, I'll still be working in the county. I work in other states, but owning your own business, you have the ability to structure your time accordingly. So I imagine I'll be giving, 20 hours a week to my clients. And then finally, I think the mayor's position should be paid as a full-time position. One great recommendation I heard the other day was we should make that salary the median area income. So for the median, individual out there making whatever they make, that's what the mayor's salary should be. Obviously, if you're not familiar, you can't change the mayor's salary during the current term. So that's state code to prevent backhanded dealing and, things like that. So
pumping it up as soon as you get in there.
Right, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So I don't perceive that changing until 2028, but I think it's important to do to make sure we have the best qualified candidates out there. And then finally, I just say, with a full-time executive assistant, administrative assistant serving the mayor, I think the task at hand is very manageable once we get through this first, call it 60 to 100 days, and get some new hires down there at City Hall and get some people in positions where they can take on that independent responsibility of running their departments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here's another logistical question, if you will. Your business, Whiskey Rock, provides consulting services to developers and others that have land use proposals or needs. And you said you intend to recuse yourself from decisions that might involve your clients, but how will that work? The mayor chairs the city council meeting, but you don't vote unless there's a tie to break. Do you see yourself chairing a meeting which might involve one of your clients? And how often do you think those kind of situations might come up before the council or the mayor is the executive officer of the city?
Yeah. So there's a couple parts to this. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to cease and close all client relationships with anyone who I've done business with or who has active projects in Sandpoint. And I'll disclose who those people are. So I will not have any active business in Sandpoint. The next thing I'll do is, because they were former clients, when those items come up, if there were a tie, for example, on a subdivision or some measure that the council's voting on, if the council were tied, I would not be able to vote. So that would simply kick it back to the council, and they would have to keep deliberating until they could come to a majority decision. So as far as conflicts, as far as people I've worked with, I'm going to disclose everyone I've worked with in town, and I'm not going to have any work in town. I will not be doing any land use consulting in Sandpoint, actually starting next week. So I've already told those clients that I'm not going to represent them anymore, and they need to find new representation. So hopefully that clears everything up, but I think people will see that in action, and I don't expect it to happen very often. There's probably three projects that will potentially come up that the council's going to have to take action on, and I will not be participating in those or voting on them. I'll just be running the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, my last question here is one I like to ask any candidate that wins elective offices, that any campaign requires you to take positions that might be off-putting to some portion of your future constituency. So Mayor-elect Graham, what would you say to those who oppose you or voted for other candidates?
Well, I would say to them, you know, talk's cheap, actions speak louder than words. Whatever your characterization of me might have been, I would just respectfully ask that you let my actions speak for me. And, you know, I think one of the most interesting things about this campaign has been the breadth of support I've received. If you were to pull everyone who supported me into a room, I think a lot of people would be somewhat shocked. I mean, I have representation and support across the spectrum, from very conservative to very liberal. And it's kind of a beauty of a nonpartisan campaign like this. I wish it would be more reflective in the national campaign, but you know, I have people all across that spectrum congratulating me, wishing me luck, supporting me. And it really shows that, you know, we do have a lot in common. And if we don't let ourselves get polarized by, you know, trigger words, and we can focus on the good of the community, we can all come together and work towards that goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a firm believer that we have much more in common than we have apart from one another. And we do tend to lose sight of that, for sure. Well, Jeremy Grin, Mayor-elect for Sandpoint, anything else you want to tell folks?
I am going to go take a quick break for a couple weeks and rest and recharge, and then I will be back mid-December, and I will be ready to hit the ground running early January. So look forward to serving you all. Thank you so much for your trust and your support, and I will do my best to represent you and keep this community moving in the right direction, making a place that we can raise kids and all be proud to call home.
Jeremy Grin, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks, Chris.